Listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, with your hosts Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. So, good evening, and welcome once again to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience. I'm Willie Hassel, along with the lovely, the mystical Lynn Nickerson. Good evening.
Hey, good evening, Willie.
How are you doing tonight?
Not bad, and yourself?
I'm doing okay. Okay for what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, you know, the weather's improving a little.
Hey.
The snow's melting.
Friday, sunny with a high of 60 degrees.
I know, that's...
I like it.
Downright balmy.
Downright balmy is what it is, and I like it. I like it. Hey, are you a country music fan?
Well, you know I am.
Funny,
I used to be more so,
Funny, I never asked you that before, but...
Mm. Yeah, there are a lot of good hits. I like the roots music, which is a lot of what we're going to deal with tonight. That's our connection tonight.
That's our connection tonight? Oh, are we going to talk about country music then?
Well, yeah. You didn't know.
No, I didn't.
Well, I can handle this.
You can handle this? All right, well, that's good. You know, some of my... I like the older country music.
Well, that's what I'm saying, the roots stuff,
I like Johnny Cash, and,
the 40s,
50s. I know you don't really, but I like Willie Nelson is one of my favorites, and Kris Kristofferson, and that kind of...
Oh, I do like Chris. I like Chris's stuff.
Not so much into the new country. But,
some of it is good, but yeah.
No, I'm not cutting it down. I'm just saying it's, you know.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
But, you know,
well, I think some of it is good is the point, but I'd love the old stuff.
Oh, yeah. But speaking of some of those people, I mean...
There are a lot of them that still like to hang around.
There are. You know... I mean, people probably don't realize. We did a show once before on Haunted Rock and Roll, and now we're kind of looking at the haunted country. I mean, you got people like Hank Williams, Johnny Cash, as I mentioned, Roy Acuff.
Yep, and then a lot of the places that they frequented that are still haunted.
Yeah, like, of course, we got Folsom Prison. That's a very haunted
That's my
place.
Story, too, by the way.
That's all right.
All right.
I wasn't going to tell your story.
Okay, why don't you take my story?
I didn't even know we were doing this, so how would I take your story?
Well, I was going to make a comment on our author tonight. His name is Matthew L. Swain, and like Willie mentioned, he did Haunted Rock and Roll, and we talked about that. And he's written, actually, 4 books on hauntings, so he considers himself a journalist, and he feels his duty is to present evidence and let the reader make the choice, which is actually good journalism in its most unbiased form, I would say. But when he was asked if he believed in ghosts or not, he sort of had an ambiguous answer. He was pretty noncommittal, even after interviewing all of these people. And he feels that after much of his research and many interviews, that there's a mountain of reports that remain unexplained, and the answer to the question about ghosts is far more complicated than what the media would have you believe, for example, like all these ghost hunting shows, and what the end result is. So a lot of people may think this is crap, and if you watch those ghost hunting shows, you would have reason to think that it was crap.
Okay. Well, don't hold anything back.
Yep. But many people think that it's founded on science, which hasn't quite yet been discovered. So Matthew Swain goes on to say, and I quote, that science is often caught off guard by the discovery of strange phenomena that doesn't quite fit the current paradigms. So, for example, scientific theories like black holes, the Big Bang, quantum mechanics, and string theory were all once on the fringe of the ideas that are slowly becoming accepted as possibilities. I mean, even Stephen Hawking talks about a lot of this. So too, says Swain, that we should remain skeptical and open-minded, veering away from the pitfall of being a cynic who can only accept nothing is real if it can't be explained. So, we have all had unexplained experiences, but does that make everyone crazy or careless in their observations? Or at times are we selectively deluding ourselves? Both Willie and I would say probably no. We don't think so. Just because we can't explain it does not mean that it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Science will eventually find its way. But in the meantime, it's important to keep that healthy skepticism accompanied by its best friend, whom we call an open mind. So we don't have all the answers yet. We have to stay open-minded. So tonight's stories bring a myriad of tales that are mostly anecdotal or taken from reports on the internet, but some are personal experiences which are substantiated in part by evidence that Swain has subsequently uncovered. So, Willie, the first story,
yes, Lynn,
take it away.
Take it away. You know me. I call myself an open-minded skeptic for sure.
You've never told me that you've given yourself that title. But
and
I can see
I've
that
never,
in you.
And I've never asked you if you like country music either. So.
Yeah, so there we go. One for one.
We're even. But yeah, science doesn't know everything, do they?
No. I mean, absolutely. They haven't got an answer for everything, no.
Absolutely not.
Or they may, but they may be wrong. Because they may be lying to us.
That's right. And a lot of it, even though it might be scientific, is theory.
That's right. And it is.
They don't know. Yeah, they don't know, and who's going to prove them wrong?
Well,
somebody, eventually, yeah.
Eventually. Yeah. Exactly.
But hey.
So what would be your first story for tonight?
Well, one of the people that was mentioned there in the opening was Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really no surprise to many of his fans, especially the ghost hunters, that Cash has refused to relinquish his spot on this earthly plane. People, though, they're kind of surprised. I mean, most people, when you think of Johnny Cash, what do you think of?
Folsom Prison Blues.
Yeah, and Southern, you know, down, he was from, what, Tennessee, was it?
I don't know. Kentucky or something
sure,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, somewhere down in the South, but... Where, you know, of course, most of his most famous hits came from.
Where did they wind up living last? Was that the Bermuda or the Bahamas?
Well, that's just what I was just going to say. A lot of people probably don't realize that Cash ended up retiring to Jamaica.
Jamaica, okay.
Yeah, to...
A really nice plantation house, an historic plantation.
Yep. His home away from home was part of a Jamaican plantation that... most refer to as Cinnamon Hill in Jamaica. Mm. It's the island paradise, considered the most haunted place in the Caribbean. I'm not sure if that means Jamaica or Cinnamon Hill. I would say probably Jamaica. Jamaica. It's what the islanders down there in Jamaica consider one of the most beautiful views of Montego Bay.
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
When I was in Montego Bay a few years back, I wish I had realized that there was places like this down there. Would have been a cool place to go investigate.
Oh, I see. Haunted places. Yeah. I was going to say, if you look at Montego Bay, you know that it's beautiful. Well, no, you're talking about haunted places.
I knew it was beautiful, yeah, but I didn't realize we had places like,
Well, I don't think, Willie, that you believed in ghosts then.
That was the problem.
What?
I said that was the problem. That was,
yeah.
That was pre-ghost days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was way back. Actually, it wasn't a few years ago.
See what your stubbornness has made you miss.
Hey, that's all right. I got to Montego Bay, the most beautiful place on the island. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay. But you finally saw the light.
I finally saw the light.
But Johnny Cash and his family had many strange events there, didn't they?
They did. And it, you know, wasn't really the most idyllic place in Jamaica. And things weren't always really that peaceful in the home where Cash retreated for his rest and relaxation. The tension and the tragedy at Cinnamon Hill and Jamaica's history makes several ghost hunting groups who investigate the haunting think that if Johnny Cash's ghost is still hunting the property, he may not be alone. Several paranormal research teams, and it mentions some of those television programs, which I'm not going to mention.
Don't give them free advertising.
Exactly. Anyways, they revealed the Cinnamon Hill Estate's paranormal and often painful past. Slaves worked on the plantation, and often they were punished by confinement in the dark basement of the property, better described as a dungeon.
Ooh.
And according to most of the visitors to the property, bear traps were hidden on the plantation's borders to keep slaves from running away.
That is horrendous.
It is. So all this fear and pain, and, you know, it's embedded in the home, the place that Cash called his home away from home. Investigators have picked up evidence of the haunting, and a lot of Cash's friends and family members also that had visited his retreat have reported run-ins with the ghosts. Cash also reported witnessed some of the paranormal activity, and he wrote about it in his autobiography.
So they were experiencing it then.
They were,
before they passed away.
I actually didn't realize he had written an autobiography.
I didn't either. And the thing is, he and his wife passed away within 1 or 2 years of each other, very close.
Oh, yeah. Anyways, Cinnamon Hill had its own spirits and memories. There are ghosts, I think, Cash writes. Many of the mysteries reported by the guests and the visitors to our house, and many that we ourselves experience, can be explained, of course, by direct physical evidence. Like a tree limb brushing against the roof of the room in which Waylon Jennings and Jesse Coulter kept hearing strange noises. But there are also other incidents. One of the events that rests in that defy conventional wisdom part of the spectrum happened one time when Cash was hosting a group of friends and family at his house. He says that a woman appeared in front of 6 people in the dining room. The woman, who guests agree, looked like she was in her early 30s and wore a full-length white dress. She walked through the kitchen door and toward the double doors on the opposite side of the room. The doors were shut, but that didn't matter to her. She just walked right through them. Seconds later, the whole group heard a banging on the outside of the door. And Patrick Carr, who helped Cash write his book, had something similar happen while staying there at Cinnamon Hill. He heard that same distinct pounding on the outside of the door one night. But you know what he did? He just quickly went back to sleep. And he said, well, it's just the ghosts.
You know, with that sighting of the woman in the white dress, there were 6 people that witnessed that.
Right. 6 people all saw her.
Yeah.
And she just walked through the door and the closed door. And
that's pretty amazing.
I know. Cash felt pretty comfortable with the spirits, too. And the ghostly appearances could be unsettling, but he never felt threatened by the presence. Never had any trouble with these souls, Cash wrote. They mean us no harm. I believe we're certainly not scared of them. They just don't produce that kind of emotion. Cash says his family's paranormal encounters on the property included a strange event that happened when he and his wife June were escorting their young son to the old family cemetery, which is another haunted place on the property. He said as they were walking through, his 4-year-old son, also named John, suddenly piped up that his brother Jamie was buried there. Did Cash have another son named Jamie?
Say that again.
Did Cash have another son named Jamie?
No. No. I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, they were kind of mystified by the statement, but June leaned down and searched the well-worn headstone in front of them. Sure enough, the grave marked the final resting spot of a man named James. He had died there in the 1770s. I guess James and Jamie.
Well, either the kid is psychic or he was reliving a past life. What did the child say again?
He said...
My brother?
He said, yeah, he said, that's my brother. Talking about the, my brother Jamie, talking about the headstone. And then when...
But it was an 1870 gravestone?
1770s, yeah.
1770. Wow. So, well, maybe his brother in another life. I think that's the point.
Yeah. Very well could be. Could be, yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Cash also, you know, he heard about other ghosts who haunted the island. Many not too far from his great house. One of the most infamous was Annie Palmerstory. He even recorded a song. This is the White Witch of Rose Hall, a woman who reportedly killed her husband and tortured her slaves in one of the island's most terrifying haunted properties, a plantation called Rose Hall.
Was Palmer, this still the Cash plantation?
No, this is a different plantation right next to his.
Oh, okay.
As legend goes, in Haiti, the voodoo-infused capital island, Caribbean island, when her parents died, her Haitian nanny not only raised her, but taught her voodoo and other forms of witchcraft. She later married a wealthy man and moved to Rose Hall. Suddenly, her husband and numerous male slaves began to disappear. Eventually, a slave or two killed her, but many islanders believe her spirit, a spirit that was too evil even for hell, lives on. Visitors have testified that they witnessed a range of supernatural activity on the property. Some have said that they have seen bloodstains appear on the walls and floors. Others have reported hearing footsteps and a baby screaming.
Very eerie. Yeah, that voodoo can be nasty stuff.
Yeah, it certainly can be nasty stuff, yeah. I don't want to go take up too much of your time there, so there's more Cash, but I'll let you go ahead.
Hank Williams was a very popular singer-songwriter. His songs were haunting, his life was haunted, and his death was even more haunted. One of the first real country superstars was Williams, and he was born Hiram King Williams in Alabama. He started going by the name of Hank when he set his sights on becoming a country performer as a teenager. He thought that Hank sounded more country. Once Williams started to write and record his songs, he seemed almost unstoppable. But fame and money didn't seem to settle Williams' restless soul. Biographers say that the nagging back problems, in addition to other ailments, led to treatments with painkillers, and those painkillers led to an addiction. In the later stages of his career, Williams grew increasingly dependent on the drugs and alcohol. His performances started to slide, and often he was booted off radio shows or concert tours because he showed up late, or he showed up intoxicated, or he didn't show up at all. So once he was reaching the pinnacle of his career, he started screwing it up. His end finally came during a strange but somehow fitting ride in West Virginia on New Year's Eve Day. He and his manager hired a 17-year-old chauffeur to drive him 1,000 miles from Montgomery, Alabama, to a show they had scheduled in Ohio. They began falling behind schedule, so Williams' nervous manager made them leave the hotel they were staying at in the middle of the night. And Williams was really weak, and he was coughing, but he had to be carried to the car by bellboys. So the driver's name happened to be Carr. His name was Charles Carr. So he sped into the night while Williams was sleeping in the back seat, but this driver had no idea that Williams was so sick. So it wasn't until the driver, who saw the car was low on gas, pulled into a gas station in a town called Oak Hill, West Virginia, that he realized Williams was dead. So he was just 29 years old, and the autopsy performed later indicated that he died of heart problems and hemorrhage. So it seemed that each of his locations along this famous death ride that lasted 1,000 miles, many of those places are reported haunted. And that's quite a distance. 1,000 miles,
yeah,
many of the places along that road. So he's thought to have stayed at several of the places he stayed at, played at, and visited are believed to be haunted in both Nashville and Montgomery. So there's quite a few stories in here about Hank Williams and how he appears in some of the strangest places. But there's a couple here at the end of the story about Williams that really kind of got me. He was actually buried in Oakwood Cemetery in Montgomery, Alabama. So he died in what? Did I say Oakville?
Oak Hill, I think you said.
Oak Hill, yeah. Okay. And then he was buried in Oakwood Cemetery. Mm-hmm. So several country and Western musicians and songwriters like Alan Jackson say that they have found signs of Williams' spirit at the cemetery there. Mm. They claim that the singer's grave in Oakwood is haunted. So while the cemetery is full of other ghosts, Williams is the only spirit in Oakwood that has a country song about him. So that was written by Alan Jackson, and it's the tune Midnight in Montgomery. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
It's that's a beautiful song.
Is it? I don't know the song.
So the song describes the singer's visit to the grave of Hank Williams while heading to a New Year's Eve show. And don't forget that Hank died on New Year's Eve Day. Mm. So the ghost of Hank Williams in the song, this is what Alan Jackson writes about, the ghost of Williams appears to him and thanks the singer for paying a tribute to him. So that's really nice, but kind of spooky, isn't it?
Yeah, nice but spooky, yeah, exactly.
Then some of the other reported haunts are, this is in Montgomery still, a lot of people come to Hank Williams' grave and they sing a few songs. And some of those people have actually heard some of Hank Williams' music playing in the breeze after they finish singing a song as a tribute to him at his grave.
And this grave, you said, is in Montgomery?
Montgomery, Alabama, Oakwood. Isn't that amazing? They have a tour organized to visit the place, but Williams is... It is the star attraction as far as his grave is concerned.
Yeah. If I'm ever in Montgomery, it said if I'm ever in Montgomery, I'll have to check that out.
You should check it out. Some of the other paranormal investigators have reported that they have gotten some EVPs of what they believe to be Hank Williams. And one of the other strange phenomena that people have experienced in Oakwood is usually just referred to as the mist, and a lot of us have seen that. And what they see is a white fog that appears near the section where a group of Confederate soldiers are buried, and it moves toward Hank Williams' grave. Isn't that odd?
Yeah, that's kind of odd.
Yeah.
I mean, Confederate soldiers wouldn't be Hank Williams fans, obviously.
I don't know what the connection is. Who knows? Maybe he has a relative. Who knows?
A relative that was in the Civil War. That could be.
That might be the connection.
There, yeah.
So that's my sad tale of Hank Williams, at least a few of the stories.
Hank Williams.
Pretty cool.
Okay.
Wow. My mother loved him. She used to, Mom played guitar and she would play his tunes.
Yeah. And Hank Williams Jr. too, of course.
Pardon me?
And Hank Williams Jr. too, of course.
Oh, I love his stuff too. Yeah. A little bit different, but all the same, equally very good. Yeah, he's a powerhouse too.
A powerhouse.
His son, yeah.
Well, they're not only, country singers that have hauntings, certain locations too, like the Stockyards Hotel.
The what?
Stockyards Hotel.
Oh,
in
yeah, that
Dallas.
Place is creepy.
A lot of country music stars, they like to stay there when they're in that area.
Dallas-Fort Worth, right?
Yep. Wait a minute. Okay. It's not just country outlaw musicians who stay at the Stockyards Hotel. It's outlaws like Bonnie and Clyde found the hotel. Located just a couple of miles from downtown Fort Worth, they found it a great place to get away in all senses of the term. The Stockyards Hotel is a favorite of a lot of country stars and fans alike. And it was originally built for the rich livestock traders. They spent a lot of time there and loads of money in the town. Experts on supernatural phenomena at the hotel say several spots in the hotel seem to be more haunted than others. The elevator, for instance.
I hate that. I mean, I think elevators are claustrophobic anyway.
They only go two directions, too.
Yeah.
Up and down. How boring is that?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be an elevator operator. Anyway, the elevator in the Stockyards Hotel has a mind of its own. It'll go up and go down without anyone clicking the buttons. And it's been repaired numerous times over the years, but the odd activity continues. And it's not just a mechanical haunting, though some people have been riding the elevator when a little girl gets in. She looks like any other little girl, but people note that her clothing seems to be out of another era, maybe from like the 1920s. The girl just gets in. She doesn't say a word. She turns to face the elevator door, and when it opens on the second floor, she takes three steps out of the elevator and disappears.
I would like to know if she looks like a solid living person.
They don't get into that, but apparently she must until she walks out.
That is so strange.
It is. It is.
What is it about ghosts that they can appear and be totally solid and then just vanish? Why don't they last longer?
I don't know.
I find that so odd.
One of those unexplained questions, I guess.
Yeah.
But speaking of the second floor, room 218 gets a lot of press for being haunted. Guests there say they have experienced a whole spectrum of paranormal activity, from hearing voices and seeing objects move. Dozens of ghost hunters and just people who want to scare themselves to death have made their investigations on the second floor. The entire second floor, by the way, seems to be a hotspot for ghostly activity. Female guests who complain to staff that while they are sleeping, they feel like somebody crawled into bed with them.
Oops,
yeah. Usually they ask hotel workers to find them another room immediately.
Hmm.
Employees and former employees of the Stockyards Hotel have lots of their own ghost stories. One desk clerk says that a telephone call came in. The employee answered it. As soon as he said hello, the caller hung up. It happened again and again. It just kept happening. Finally, the employer noticed the call was coming from a phone in the lobby.
That's weird.
So the phone rang again, and this time he says, well, I'm going to look and see who this jerk is that's doing this. He could see the lobby, the whole lobby, and there was nobody there.
Nobody there.
The phone was plainly hung up on the wall like it was supposed to
be. Those ghosts fool around with electricity, don't they? They're clever.
I know what they are, aren't they? But, you know, on that note,
we are at the bottom of the hour, aren't we?
We are. We're at the bottom of the hour, so we'll be back and
take a little break.
Thank you.
Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. And you are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience, where tonight we are talking about some of the ghosts of country music.
Yes, we are.
So, would you like to tell us a little?
Yeah, I was going to tell you about a little story about the Flying Saucer Draft Emporium, which isn't noted for any one particular country singer, but it's in the heart of Nashville, and it's a favorite Nashville night spot. So there are some ghosts there. So it's located on 10th Avenue. And it's noted for its supernatural activity. And at the end of the story, you'll see why. So the managers started experiencing a group of strange phenomena. And they decided to get an investigative group in there. So the details that they told them about were: the coin slots that feed the pool tables would move in and out, and usually those don't slide easily.
No, they don't. Those coin things, yeah.
Yeah.
They're usually pretty hard.
The billiard balls slide across the table. The Q-sticks fall from the walls. Drinks topple off the tables, and the chairs slide across the floors. And the TV sets.
All this normal stuff.
That happens, right? Normally paranormal. And the TV sets turn off and on in the billiard room in particular. And the most convincing piece of evidence came from one of the members of the bar's cleaning crew, who said that they often encounter the ghost of an old man walking around the bar. But other people have also looked in a mirror that they've got there, and they see somebody else's reflection other than their own. That's pretty creepy. And you've had experiences with mirrors that are pretty creepy.
I did have a very creepy experience.
I think mirrors can be an opening to another portal.
I think it must have been in my case.
Yeah. So the manager went along the ghost hunt. They don't mention who they were, but they were trying to get some kind of reaction from the spirits. And the manager asked if there's anybody there to please try and signal their presence. So they got it caught. I'm sorry, they didn't catch an EVP. It was actually the audibly heard a voice.
A disembodied voice.
Disembodied voice say, try. And this is without unaided hearing. And then the temperature decided to drop 10 degrees. Mm. So they had the temperature indicator, and that's quite a drop, 10-degree drop.
I think I experienced that one day, too.
Yeah, really 10 degrees? That's a lot.
That day at the James House, it was probably close to it.
So that's what happened, and they looked into the research. They researched into the history of the place, and it seems that the Flying Saucer was actually built on the famous train station called Union Station in Nashville. And the train station was the scene of numerous emotional homecomings. There were the soldiers coming home from the war to meet their loved ones. And then there in the 40s and 50s, there were a lot of fans that would go to Union Station to get a glimpse of all the Nashville country and western stars that were coming in. But there were other more desperate reunions in the station. In fact, the billiard room itself may have been placed right over the baggage claim area in the train station. And the negative part about that is, in the aftermath of a horrible train wreck in the 1900s, the local historians say that the baggage area had become an impromptu morgue. So that could be a good reason for a lot of disenchantment in that area.
Yes.
Yeah. So the paranormal experts suggested that all of these highly charged emotions have been embedded into the space that is now the billiard room. and that the apparitions and the odd events that witnesses have reported over the years are just a manifestation of that spiritual energy that became intertwined with Nashville's favorite bars. So that is something that Steve Wilson and Betty Comerford spoke about just last week, this place memory thing, where place memory itself may not even be a ghostly haunting. It's something that's kind of burnt into the passage of time. And that's kind of an ethereal concept, but there's energy to place memory to different areas, and then you've got spirits on top of that that are often drawn to places like that, particularly where there's been a lot of happiness and a lot of tragedy. It just makes for a lot of energy to work with.
So
I thought that was kind of cool, the fact that there had been a morgue there in the baggage claim area.
That's Union Station. That's never good.
Yeah. Weird. Well, that's my story.
Is that your story?
Yeah.
Well, stick to it, whatever you do. I'm going to talk about a place that I know you really want to go.
Where is that?
Bobby Mackey's Music World.
Oh, yeah, right. For all you intrepid ghost hunters out there who want to live a fearless life, don't go to Bobby Mackey's.
I almost went, but I was about 100 miles away. But I just said, nah, I don't have time this trip.
You exercised good judgment in that case, Willie.
No, it was a matter of time.
The place is bad.
It was a matter of time, not good judgment.
I don't even think that you should go in there.
One of these days, I imagine I will.
I mean,
when I'm in the area.
Well, yeah. Mr. Intrepid Ghost Hunter. Well, why don't you continue with the things that happened there?
Well,
and Bobby let our
Mackey.
Audience know how evil it is.
Bobby Mackey bought this bar out, and it was in Wilder, Kentucky. And he expected it to be a kind of a rough and tumble place, and, you know, it's a honky tonk and all that. But what he didn't realize was that some of those rough and tumble guests were actually dead. Mm. Bobby Mackey's Music World, one of the most haunted locations in country music's paranormal landscape, and I'd say probably one of the most haunted, period.
I agree with you.
The haunting of this establishment has been, it's been investigated on TV, explored in books, documentary films.
Yeah, many people have been investigating there.
Yeah, people tell and retell the story. Bobby Mackey, he doesn't look like your typical haunted property. In fact, it looks like a normal bar and a restaurant. Located on, it's on the shores of the Licking River. It just kind of sounds...
The Licking River, isn't that weird?
It just kind of sounds light and fluffy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe that's why Mackey didn't suspect anything when he bought the place back in the 70s.
I get a mental picture of a cow licking the salt block.
Okay, well, that's the way your mind works, I guess. But anyways, within days after the... Star bought the place, the one-time paranormal skeptic said events began to happen that eventually convinced him that not only did the supernatural exist, but that there was something inexplicable happening in his new investment. Workers who were preparing the bar for opening noticed that lights would turn on and off by themselves, and they just thought, well, it's just nothing, it's wiring problems. And they just laughed it off. The activity was weird but harmless, at least at the beginning. Didn't stay that way, though. Mackey and his family were just receiving a glimpse of the supernatural crowd that had packed his bar. The ghosts didn't seem like they were very great company, a reliable witness claimed of the unseen sure force that shoved him. In fact, Mackey's wife, Janet, swore on an official affidavit that she was thrown down a set of steps. Others said they were pinched, punched. Still other witnesses said they were slapped. In interviews, Mackey said he thought about selling the haunted enterprise, but he sunk all his money into it. He was kind of stuck with it, so he decided to continue it. And originally, the bar was a slaughterhouse.
Which, right there.
Yeah, those who believe... suggested that the bloodletting attracted malevolent spirits.
How can you ever get rid of all that blood?
And otherwise, folklore say that groups affiliated with the satanic or dark magic rites once performed their rituals in the slaughterhouse. because of the copious quantities of blood and the spells and curses. Mm-hmm. However, there's no historical evidence, though, that it was used for a meeting place for satanic worship.
I don't imagine you'd find that in the town report, do you?
Well, no, probably not, but no. Witness testimony, you know.
Well, that would have been a long time ago, hopefully.
Yeah. So, you know, the place had a reputation. And the building was rumored to be the scene of a grisly murder, and the victim may still haunt the place. A young woman named Pearl Bryan met up with two unsavory characters, Alonzo Walling and Scott Jackson, in early February of 1896. Bryan was lured into the slaughterhouse and killed. And according to folklore, we don't know.
She was beheaded.
Well, yep, police found the body. They never recovered the woman's head. Jackson and Walling quickly apprehended, although they were offered a lesser sentence of life in prison to disclose the whereabouts of the victim's head. They wouldn't do it.
I know, isn't that incredible?
According to some tales, the murderers were afraid of incurring the wrath of Satan for revealing the location of the sacrifice. So they opted out of the plea deal, and they were convicted of murder and sentenced to death.
Very weird.
Another bit of folklore history says that the curse behind the haunting, witnesses report that Walling stepped to the gallows. He eyed those who gathered to see his execution, and those who had condemned him to death. Then he spoke his last words. He cursed all of them and vowed to return from the grave.
Who was that that cursed them all?
Walling, one of the guys that murdered.
Yeah.
Then there's another spirit that witnesses have seen behind the bar. He looks mean, and he's not someone you want to tangle with. And people get this distinctly bad vibe that was the ghost of Walling. During an initial tour of the building, when Bobby and his wife Janet first bought the building, strangely, the couple watched as a large metal door opened on its own. It was an unwelcoming welcome for the future investors of the property. Undeterred, though, the couple slid through the door, half open, and Bobby clambered onto the stage, looking into the now deserted, dusty bar. Bobby imagined all the chairs filled with people come to hear the music and such, just sitting there and having a good time. And well, he saw this in his mind's eye. Something caught his attention. A woman with a long white gown and long brown hair was staring back at him from the dance floor. He called out to the shape, but she disappeared. And one of the darkest spirit that resides in the building took pleasure in tormenting Janet. Janet, Bobby's wife.
You said Janet died?
No. The spirit took. Liked to torment her.
Yeah.
And this was interesting. There's another rumor that a pregnant woman committed suicide in the club. She was a dancer named Johanna, and the story later became the subject of one of Bobby's songs. Are you familiar with that song, Johanna?
No.
It's a good song.
What's the name of it?
Johanna.
Oh,
that was her name. Yeah, that's the name of the song. And lots of people suggest that it's not a coincidence that Bobby's pregnant wife established some sort of spiritual connection with the ghost of the ill-fated pregnant dancer. And this is kind of creepy. The late Carl Lawson.
That, I think, is probably the creepiest of all of this, because it goes to show you're not invincible.
He was one of Bobby's first employees, and he wasn't just tormented. He was possessed, he said, and that was according to his own account. He served as the caretaker and was more exposed to the supernatural forces that gripped the premises because he also lived in an apartment above the club.
And he was also Bobby's best friend.
Lawson says the spirits assaulted him. Eventually, Lawson began to believe he was possessed. He became self-destructed and continually entertained evil thoughts. And, his friends, and they noticed this, and it wasn't like him. The disruption came so bad that during his more lucid moments, he agreed to undergo an exorcism. The grueling six-hour ceremony.
Six-hour ceremony. Exorcism.
Some of that is available, video of it on the...
I don't think I'll be looking for that.
You don't think so?
Mm.
The spirit that possessed Lawson fought with the preacher, performing the rite physically and verbally. Lawson also began to speak in German, Latin, two languages he swore he didn't know.
Yeah, that's when Mackie realized he probably should get rid of the place, right?
Not yet, I don't think. But it's interesting to note that later, Carl Lawson did die.
I don't remember the circumstances. It was soon after the exorcism. And he was interviewed, and I don't remember, something like, I don't know, one of the unsolved mysteries type thing. But he was interviewed, and he looked like a frail, beaten man.
Yeah.
And he died shortly after that.
Yeah.
That was after the exorcism, too.
Yeah. When he was on one of those ghost shows, he didn't really look all that great.
He looked terrible.
But it was rather strange circumstances that he died of. I do know that. Okay. You want to tell us something a little bit later scary?
Oh, is that the end of your Bobby Mackey story? There are other things, too, that happened there.
There's more, yeah.
But, yeah, you know. The place is just rife with negativity.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there was something pretty much on the lighter side. I was going to talk about Folsom Prison.
Funny that a prison would be on the lighter side, huh?
Yeah. one of Cash's most haunting songs is the Folsom Prison Blues, and of course he played there at the prison. And the song is about an inmate who was forced to live the rest of his life with regret over his decision to commit a heinous act. So according to stories that have trickled out of the infamous prison, the regret that some unlucky inmates have felt over their dark deeds during this life doesn't necessarily end with a prison morgue or death row. So there are a couple of stories here. Let me mention Folsom Prison is in California, in Folsom, California, but it's about 20 miles northeast of Sacramento, because I couldn't remember for the life of me where it was. Mm. Guards and former inmates say that the facility is awash in phantom appearances and mysterious sounds, and that approximately 93 prisoners were executed at Folsom. That number doesn't necessarily include the ones that died naturally or not so naturally, nor does it include the guards who committed murder or died there. Mm-hmm. So one of the places you'll hear stories is in the prison's museum. They've got a museum there, which I thought was very odd. Yeah. And it's run by a former corrections officer. His name is James Brown. And while he was a correction officer, he never saw anything. But as he started working in the museum, many people would tell him stories. So he kind of thinks that maybe there's some truth to some of this stuff. So one of them was a prison riot broke out during a Thanksgiving meal, and the prisoners didn't kill the guard. What happened was he died of a heart attack under the severe duress of the event. And then there's also a debate as to who the guard really is, but he's simply known as the Folsom Phantom. Now, some say that because the ghost is seen at the gate, that he's the one who had the heart attack, or he was the one who was stabbed. But anyway, in either case, the witnesses have seen him, usually on foggy nights, at the front gate of the prison as a shadowy figure that stands watch over the prison. And then another infamous supernatural encounter occurred late one night. As the story goes, it had been an otherwise uneventful evening. The guards had settled into their normal routine, except for the prison guards, when things are typically extremely calm, then the guards get wary. So on that night, they had a reason to be anxious. The story that's been handed down over the years was that a couple of guards noticed a man walking on one of the catwalks, but no one was supposed to be in that part of the prison. In fact, no one was supposed to be out of their cells. So they thought that it looked like an inmate, and they started chasing him, and they told him to stop, and he wouldn't stop. One account has the guards firing a gun. But when he didn't stop, they set on foot after him. So fearing that the prisoner was escaping, the guards jumped into action. And as they're chasing this guy, he just evaporates.
Ooh, I hate it when that happens.
So the guards went around and they decided they're going to do a lockdown, and they did a head count, and they were mystified to discover that no one, not even an inmate or a guard, was missing. So whoever it was had to been from another world. And this is that's also documented on the internet, so that's a pretty big, well-known event there. And Brown goes on to say that there are quite a few prisoners who died at the prison, but a lot of them died in the prison's hospital. And it had a bad reputation, believe it or not, because a lot of the inmates were murdered in the hospital, according to his reports.
You know, you seem to come across a lot of that in prison.
That's kind of scary.
Not only is it the deaths of, prisoners that were executed, but there was prisoners
that were murdered.
Prisoners.
Yep.
Guards murdered prisoners. Prisoners murdered guards.
And medical people evidently murdered. So maybe medical people were paid to do these jobs. That's really a frightening prospect.
Yeah.
You don't have much security, do you?
No, you don't.
Very scary. And besides the hospital, the ghosts also haunt the prison morgue and the row of cells that make up death row. And that's about it. That's enough. Death row, the morgue, and the hospital are very haunted.
Yeah, I think that's enough. Is Folsom Prison still...
Well, he goes on to say that the prison, at least at this writing, is still in operation. Okay. So that was, 2015, I think, is the date of this. So I don't think it's closed.
I really don't know. I just, when you were telling that, I got to thinking, is that place still open? You know?
Yeah.
It probably,
you don't
probably
hear
is,
much about it.
No, and you know what's funny? Johnny Cash kind of had a reputation, a lot of people thought he did time.
Well, I thought he did.
No, he never spent a day in jail.
No. Well, he did have a rough and ready kind of attitude.
Nobody
pushed him around.
It was just kind of a part of the mystique of Johnny Cash, I guess.
Yeah, he always dressed in black.
Yep, the man in black.
Yep, he's another one my mother loved. Yeah, loved his music.
He did a lot of great songs.
Oh, he did.
He did.
So our connection to Johnny Cash is the fact that he wrote the song for Folsom Prison Blues, but there are a lot of hauntings there.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that concludes our stories for tonight, doesn't it?
I think it probably does.
Yeah.
We don't really have time to go into another one. So.
Yeah, might do it another night.
Yeah, hey, we can always continue it.
You got Patsy Cline and...
Yeah. There's plenty of haunted country star and country venues, hotels,
country
bars, record stores.
Yeah, record stores. There was a cool one in here about RCA. One of the DJs kept hearing a little girl talking to him, and he did some history on the place. And the RCA studio was built over the house had been destroyed. The studio was built over the foundation. And where he heard the voice coming from was the children's bedroom. And the kids were playing on a bed. And they were jumping on the bed. And the little boy fell into the little girl and pushed her out the open window accidentally. That's pretty sad.
It is.
And that's where Elvis got his start, at the RCA studio. I think in Nashville. But that's why
Nashville
it was,
or Memphis?
Hmm?
Is it Nashville or Memphis? I thought Elvis actually started in Memphis. I'm not really sure.
Well, this arcade studio, they do think that Elvis haunts the place and that he got his start there.
Yeah.
And he recorded a Heartbreak Hotel there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why they brought up RCA Studios.
Yeah. Okay. Hey.
All right. It's been a pleasure.
Country music, ghosts. Put the two together and what do you got?
Yeah, you got mystery.
Okay. So that is Spirit Radio. I almost forgot. Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. And we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and good night.
You have been listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience, with your hosts, Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson, on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
Yeah. In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test. It is what it is, and whatever. Time is still the infinite jest. The arrow flies when you dream. The hours tick away, the cells tick away. The watchmaker keeps to his schemes. The hours tick away, they tick away. The measure of a life is a measure of love and respect. So hard to earn, so easily burn. The measure.